Support for WYPR comes from University of Maryland Medical System, where world-class doctors are pioneering immunotherapy that's helping to stop cancer in its tracks. And with screenings and advanced treatments across the state, it's cancer care made for Marylanders. Learn more at umms.org/cancer.
Good afternoon and welcome to Midday. I'm WYPR health reporter Scott Massioni. As Americans age, so too does the opioid epidemic. An investigation by scientists at Northwestern University found overdose deaths from opioids for those 55 and older soared tenfold from 1999 to 2019. Trade-Offs, a nonprofit organization focused on healthcare, digs deep into these kinds of issues. They've reported on clinics treating older adults. There are challenges, but one clinic here in Baltimore has a model that they say seems to be working. Trade-Offs founder and executive director and executive editor Dan Gornstein joins us now to talk about it. And a little later in the program, we'll hear from the medical director at the clinic. First of all, I want to welcome you here, Dan. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, Scott. Thanks so much for having me. I'm really psyched to be here.
So tell us, you know, how does the opioid epidemic play out among the older demographic?
Well, so look, nearly 20,000 people over the age of 55 died of an opioid overdose as of 2023. And right now, some 1 million seniors are living with opioid addiction, and they're often grappling with problems like arthritis, diabetes, heart failure, plus housing, hunger, and loneliness. You add all that up, and people have some real needs, and the healthcare system struggles to provide adequate care for this cohort of people who are in it bad.
And you cover all things that are, you know, healthcare related, healthcare policy. What drew this story into you and wanting to cover it? I mean, there's so many things to cover. Why is this something that really drew you in and felt important?
Yeah, thanks for that question. I mean, what we try to do is we try to cover stories that are really a little bit underreported and try to shine a light on those. And, you know, I think there's a lot of attention on opioid use, on people with substance use disorder. But the plight of older Americans with substance use disorder is much less known. And we thought that there was a real opportunity to talk about this vulnerable group of people who are really high need. And we were super curious, like, is there an opportunity to focus or highlight some kind of like solution to how healthcare providers are trying to treat this urgent problem? So I think when you sort of like really step back and look at it, it's like underreported problem, real need for some real people who are hurting out there. And after we did some reporting and we came across Reach, this methadone clinic that's kind of turned care on its head a little bit compared to traditional methadone clinics, we thought this could be a really powerful story.
Yeah, and let's dig into your piece here. You did a long-form podcast along with an article about this, and there's one clip from the beginning of the podcast that I want to play here because it's pretty surprising, actually. You'll hear Dr. Malik Burnett and his patient, Miss Gray, who suffers from an opioid addiction.
Have you talked with the surgeon?
No.
Okay. They may tell you that they want you to stop taking your methadone beforehand.
I know. They did.
Don't do that.
Don't.
Right?
Oh, okay, good.
Just keep
good.
Taking your methadone good. The way that it's supposed to be taken.
So the surgeon is telling the patient here not to to not stop taking their methadone, which is, for those who don't know, methadone is a drug that helps people with opioid addiction to not feel addicted. It sort of keeps the withdrawal symptoms at bay. What was your reaction to hearing that, and why the differing opinions of different doctors here?
Well, so look, I mean, I'm no doctor, right? Like, I'm a journalist. So
sure, sure.
I can't kind of get into the science or the medicine behind it. But what we found revealing about that exchange between Dr. Burnett and his patient, Miss Gray, was that you have and in Dr. Burnett, you've got this opioid specialist, right? This person who treats people with opioids. And Miss Gray was going to go get some surgery to have this arthritic hip dealt with. And the surgeon was saying, well, you got to, you know, the surgeon was advising her how to be dealing with her addiction health problem. And that surgeon doesn't really know how to properly treat addiction. And so in this like quick 15 second exchange, you kind of see how disconnected the healthcare system is from itself, right? You've got the addiction specialist saying like, this is what you need to do to deal with your opioid addiction. And you got the surgeon saying, this is what you need to do to deal with your hip. But the truth is, right, like these two people need to be talking to each other, and that's hard to come by. And so you can see how in an exchange like this, if Miss Gray didn't have the benefit of talking to an addiction expert, she might have done something in all in the effort of like taking care of her hip, right? She might have done something that could have put her at risk for relapse with the opioids.
Right.
And so it's like, it's really super scary.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, we've seen the opioid epidemic started in the 1990s, grew up to extreme heights in the early 2000s and the 2010s. Now it has branched off into many other different drugs. How is it manifesting in terms of older adults? I mean, are these people that got addicted in the 90s and have continued their addiction? Are there new addiction patients? You know, what are we seeing here within these older patients?
Well, I mean, what we're seeing with older patients is people who, just as you said with your question, they began using substances for whatever reason, but they have remained, they've continued to use. And as they've gotten older, other natural problems that come up are cropping up for them. Problems with arthritis, problems with their heart, diabetes, you know, all these sort of typical problems that come with aging. And so it's really interesting. Miss Gray is a good example of a patient who like is dealing with addiction and doesn't just have addiction problems, right? She's got all this wide variety of health problems that also need to be addressed. But most of her adult life, she's been focused on the addiction, and she's all those other problems that have been kind of creeping up, growing up slowly on her, she's not really ignored them. But as people really get older, all of a sudden the health chickens come home to roost, and people need to be dealing with these other basic things too. And so what REACH does is this clinic, which is really sort of, it makes a lot of intuitive sense, is it says, okay, how can we try to meet the addiction needs of our patient population, as well as help them with the variety of other sort of more garden variety health problems that they're experiencing? And that's really like, that's kind of the, if you want to call it this, I don't want to overstate it, but like that's sort of the magic of what REACH is attempting to do.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm WYPR reporter Scott Massioni, hosting Midday Today. We're talking about the treatment of opioid use disorder among older Americans. I'm talking to Dan Gornstein. He's the founder and executive editor of the health news nonprofit Tradeoffs. They recently covered a Baltimore addiction clinic with a different take on treating substance abuse. REACH stands for Recovery Enhanced by Access to Comprehensive Healthcare. So you were just talking, it's a holistic approach that this clinic is giving these older adults. Tell us more about what sets them apart from maybe what another treatment facility might be doing.
Yeah, okay. So I think there are three things that REACH is really trying to do that's super important. And when we think about, you know, at the top, I said like, you know, is REACH potentially like a scalable solution, right? So One thing that REACH is trying to do is make sure that people get their medications. There's something like, let me just, one federal study found that less than 16% of people on Medicare with opioid addiction are getting either buprenorphine or methadone. So the average person is not even getting this basic medication that they need, right? So first and foremost, REACH is trying to make sure that happens. Check on the medication. Another thing that's really important here, Scott, that I think can sometimes be overlooked is trust. REACH is really trying to build out the trust that patients have. A lot of these people have come into the healthcare system in one way or another, and many have experienced a lot of discrimination, a lot of prejudice as being a quote-unquote user, a quote-unquote addict. Like, what's wrong with you? Why is this your pro, like, why can't you like figure this out? And there's been a lot of shame. And so it's hard to like seek out care when you need care if you've been treated like a second-class citizen at best. So one of the things that the folks at REACH really went out to do was to say, look, we need to build up trust. These people have been kind of burned by other providers in the past, and even some addiction providers where they're used to there would be, and this is still true today, you've got clinics out there where you got a kind of like three strikes and you're out rule, where if you have three relapses, you're like kicked out of the program. REACH has really tried to be like, no, we want to make sure that people trust us. We're responsive, we're humanistic. Finally, so that's the second thing, that trust. The third thing is coordination. How can you make sure that people are getting, like Ms. Gray, make sure that they're getting the care that they need for their addiction, but also getting care for their arthritic hip? And that's hard, right? Because a lot of these people who are coming into REACH, they struggle with housing, they struggle with money, they struggle sometimes with cognitive abilities. So and we all know how complicated the healthcare system is, getting from one hospital to the next clinic to whatever to get that test. Like, so they do some handholding and some support and what we, sort of tongue in cheek kind of called air traffic control for these patients. So those are three things that REACH is trying to do that really helps it stand out from some of its peers around the country.
And if you'd like to chime in out there, don't forget you can call 410-662-8780 or email us at midday@wypr.org. And Dan, you were just talking about that stigma, and we have a clip from Miss Gray who really just talks about how hard that was for her, at really her rock bottom.
Crying and twisting and turning in the floor. When I think about it, it makes me feel bad. But I was really crying because I was in so much pain. And then using them drugs too, it seemed like the drug was making it worse.
I mean, you can really hear, the anguish in her voice there. And I think the stigma mixed with the access to care has been one of the biggest issues that we've seen here, as you mentioned. And Baltimore's already working on a handful of things. They have settlement money with almost $600 million coming in. Can you talk a bit about how disjointed care is right now? I mean, it seems like there are many gaps between, as you were saying, getting housing, but then also getting to your cardiologist, and then also getting treatment. I mean, that's a whole day in itself of just going to different doctors and getting around on a bus. I mean, it's not an easy life when you're just trying to survive, to figure out what you need to do to live.
Well, I think that's really, Scott, I think candidly, that's what REACH is really trying. That's the gap that REACH is trying to fill. I think REACH has said, we understand that many of the people we work with are grappling with multiple challenges simultaneously. So what kinds of services can we provide? And so one of the things that REACH does, in addition to working on folks with addiction, in addition to working to do that air traffic control work, is they have mental health staff there to make sure that the people are helping. I just want to, I know we're getting up on time, and I just want to say something about that Miss Gray clip that you played there. You asked me at the beginning, why do this story? I don't know how well understood addiction is, but one of the things that I started to learn, Scott, as a result of the reporting we did on this, was that sometimes people in their 40s, 50s, 60s, and older are using substances is not because they're trying to get high. And we heard it in that clip from Miss Gray. Miss Gray was using it because she's just trying to like be out of pain. And the reason she hit this rock bottom moment, right, was because she couldn't have the drug. The drug wasn't doing it for her anymore. And so she needed another solution. And I think more and more Americans have addiction problems. The healthcare system is going to need to figure out how to be responsive to these people. And I think it's understanding, being a little bit more curious about why people use and a little less shaming about why people or that people use is essential to providing more meaningful care to people who are really struggling.
Well, Dan, thanks so much for joining us, and great work on the reporting. It was a really, really interesting a podcast and everything there. Dan Gorenstein's the founder and executive editor of the healthcare news nonprofit Tradeoffs. Their recent deep dive into treating the opioid epidemic among older adults can be found on the Midday page at WYPR.org. Up next, we'll hear from Dr. Malik Burnett, who leads the REACH Clinic's treatment program. It's Midday. I'm Scott Massioni. Stay with us.
You're listening to 88.1 WYPR, Baltimore's NPR news station.
Welcome back to Midday. I'm WYPR health reporter Scott Massioni, filling in for Tom Hall today. Coming up on Monday, Dr. Carla Hayden is back in the host chair. She'll talk about why some Democratic lawmakers in Maryland aren't so keen on Governor Westmore's proposal to increase the state's Democratic representation in Congress. Today, if you've just joined us, we're talking about the effect of the opioid epidemic on adults as they age. In Baltimore, where this crisis has been felt acutely and is still felt, one addiction clinic, REACH, says it has a better model for treating older Americans. The news outlet Tradeoffs explored this new approach recently. Earlier in the show, we talked to its founder and executive editor, Dan Gorenstein. Now, to learn more about the clinic, we turn to Dr. Malik Burnett. He's the medical director at REACH. He's joining me here in Studio A. Malik, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So, you know, it turns out we're work neighbors. You were just talking about you're right down the street here. I'm curious, you know, how did you arrive at this work and, you know, how did you get into it?
Yeah, I, was in medical school and certainly at the time when I was in medical school back in, 2012 when I finished, addiction wasn't really a thing that we talked a lot about in medical school training. I was interested in doing general surgery, did general surgery for a little while, and then realized that I had a lot more intellectual interests outside of the hospital than what general surgery life affords you to do. Became a lobbyist down on Capitol Hill, working at Drug Policy Alliance, worked on cannabis policy reform across a number of different states, and then wanted to try to tie it back all together with my medical training, and so did a preventive medicine residency at Hopkins, ultimately preventive medicine as a specialty, adopted addiction medicine as a subspecialty, formalized it, came and did a fellowship at the University of Maryland in addiction in 2020, and then have been doing it ever since.
Wow, you've been all around.
Yeah, a little bit.
You know, so many people have been hurt by this opioid epidemic, and it was at its worst just, you know, not too long ago, especially here in Baltimore. It does not spare any age groups. And can you tell us how older adults are specifically impacted by this? And, you know, we were talking to Dan a little bit about comorbidities, about getting to different doctors. You know, what are you seeing in your day to day that is very different from people who may be in their 20s, 30s, 40s that are addicted?
Yeah, I think Dan described the situation pretty well. You know,
particularly here in the city of Baltimore, there's been a long-standing history of opiate use. So you have a large cohort of individuals who've been utilizing street drugs for, decades. And then, you know, as they get older, they don't have as much physical reserve, physical well-being, health, general overall health. And they start to experience, the typical chronic medical conditions that, people experience as they get older, coupled with significant challenges relative to their social determinants, access to stable housing, income, all those sort of things. And if they continue to have their substance use disorder and it's unmanaged, then they're more susceptible to succumb to overdose and die.
And what is your clinic doing specifically that is changing the way that older people might be able to find some relief faster or better than maybe a traditional treatment program?
Yeah. I think when I was listening to the ad coming in here, it was characterized as some new approach. I would say that actually, it's not very new. It's actually a well-established program that the state has sponsored. It's a program that we describe as our health home. And we really focus on that concept, which is a topic that, as I said before, the Maryland Department of Health encourages opioid treatment programs to pursue, because unlike most other medical experiences, patients participating in opioid treatment programs come to the clinic much more frequently than they would even visit their primary care doctor. And so, as was highlighted in your previous segment, navigating the health system is difficult even for the healthiest person with very minimal, minimal appointments, right? Just getting an appointment at your primary care doctor is difficult inherently, right? Yeah. But for somebody who's got multiple comorbid medical conditions, needing to navigate the health system is imperative for their overall recovery. And, given that we're seeing them frequently in our clinic, they come, some people come every day, some people come, multiple times a week, some people come once a week, so on and so forth. But we get to touch base with those patients much more regularly than, many other providers. And so we can really focus on helping them address and navigate the complexities of the health system and get to the appointments that they need. And, as the clinicians in the clinic, we certainly see a lot of the other chronic medical conditions that patients are dealing with. Unfortunately, the system is not set up such that we can address them directly, but, partnering and trying to collaborate with other providers in the community to be able to ensure that our patients are getting the care that they need for their actual medical conditions is core to the program.
And so what might a day look like for you and also for a patient? Are you helping people find bus schedules? Are you setting them up with a psychiatrist, setting them up with a cardiologist? Also, there's methadone and Suboxone. There's so many different angles of this. So, what are you trying to schedule around every single day?
Yeah. First, I would say it's certainly not a one man band. We got a whole team there, and without the team, a lot of this wouldn't be possible. And I think that what really makes Reach unique is that it has a robust team of people all focused on playing their role relative to being able to get somebody the care, comprehensive care that they need. And so, my role and the other nurse practitioners and clinic and providers who work with me, we focus on ensuring that people have access to the best of brand medications for opiate use disorder. So that's whether they need methadone or buprenorphine, or, in the event that they have other unmanaged substance use disorder related issues, we ensure that, we're providing that care. We've got a team of nurse case managers who work with patients to be able to schedule appointments for other medical conditions. Their counseling teams help them navigate, all the social determinants of health needs, whether they want to, get into a higher level of care for inpatient rehabilitation, or they, need to get, access to social safety net services with the state. We've also got another thing that I think is particularly unique at Reach, peer recovery support specialists who will, help people get their IDs back, their birth certificates back. We'll go to appointments with patients because, it's certainly scary sometimes going to a medical appointment when you haven't been to the doctor in 4 or 5 years, and then you've got a serious medical condition that, is being described to you. As a patient, you can tend to gloss over and not get all the important points. But if you have somebody who's there with you, like a peer recovery support specialist, then that person can kind of make sure that all the I's are being dotted and all the T's are being crossed, and you know what needs to happen for follow-up is facilitated. And so that cohesive team approach at Reach that we try to implement is what I think really gets the results that we're looking for the patients.
I'm Scott Massioni, the health reporter at WYPR, hosting Midday Today. We're talking about the treatment of opioid use and substance abuse in older Americans. I'm speaking with Dr. Malik Burnett. He's the medical director at Reach Health Services, who was recently featured in reporting from the nonprofit news organization Trade-Offs. Don't forget, you can call in at 410-622-8780 or email us at midday@wypr.org if you'd like to say something or ask a question to Dr. Burnett here. We have a clip from Ms. Gray, who I think really talks about what you were just mentioning, the stigma from doctors, the scariness of going in there. So let's hear what she had to say.
She would stare at me like, you know, why you use drugs, or, you know, like I was dirt or something, you know, and just made me feel bad. I know I look bad, but you ain't gotta, you know, talk to me like that.
So how do you, when you go along to a doctor's appointment, you know, how do you kind of, you know, for lack of a better term, handhold a little bit, you know, help people fight through this stigma, talk about the issues that they have with the professional who may not be as willing to be as compassionate as you are?
Yeah. So, you know, I think the team, when, you know, our peer recovery specialists go with the patients to their appointments, are there to just be a listening ear. And then, you know, I try in my role as one of the medical providers there to reach out to other providers in the community and collaborate with them and, you know, one, listen to what their concerns are relative to the management of the issues that patient might need. And then, you know, talk about how we can come up with a solution that works both from the patient's needs for substance use disorder management and their, you know, broader medical conditions. So that includes, you know, specialists, surgeons, primary care doctors, and the whole nine yards, and making sure that we all can put together a collaborative plan that takes the best interests of the patient and puts them at the forefront.
How has working with the city been? You know, they have this settlement money of about nearly $600 million. They've been trying to find ways to do these connections that you're talking about, as well as reduce stigma. That's one part of their vision for this. You know, have you worked with much of the overdose response council at all? And what have you been hearing from them?
Yeah, totally. I think that they're doing, you know, heroes level work, right? Like, you know, it's certainly one, a lot of coordination relative to managing all of the various settlement payments and then coming up with a comprehensive plan that takes into interest the, you know, needs of the community. And then, you know, what I would say generally, the system is organized in such a way where addiction is probably the third rail of medicine, right? And so you've got somatic physical care, mental health care as the second rail, and then addiction and substance use disorder care as a third rail. And so tying it back together, right, stitching it back together is certainly complex work and takes time. And, you know, I think that the city is certainly putting together a plan that, and, you know, we're happy to collaborate with them to be able to continue to build that plan. But it's going to take a concerted effort across all parties in order to be able to get real results.
Absolutely. And I'm sure the people who, you know, are experiencing addiction who are older, they've seen the drug landscape change. And right now it's changing extremely quickly. If people aren't aware, the Rapid Analysis of Drugs, which is Maryland's testing unit for drugs, I mean, it's showing things that are coming in from Philly, from other parts of the nation, that are things like xylazine, metatomidine, and these are things that can hurt people, can depress their systems in ways that opioids do not, and are not reactive to things like naloxone, which is an overdose reversal drug. How is that change, first of all, impacting maybe people who are relapsing, who are older? You know, how are you keeping up with this changing landscape?
Yeah, I was formerly one of the medical director for the Center for Harm Reduction Services at the state, and worked to put together with a team at the state the Rapid Analysis of Drugs program. And so I think, you know, it is a reflection of work that we try to do even at Reach, where we're educating our patient population to say that, hey, these are not, when you go out and you buy things on the street, you're not you have in your mind, the patient has in their mind, that they're getting something that's in a similar frame and fashion to what you might get at a pharmaceutical, at a drugstore, right? But in reality, you know, every single dose that you get is totally different, and there's no level of consistency nor, you know, safety protections relative to utilizing street drugs. And so programs like rapid analysis of drugs allows people to be able to get a better understanding of what it is that they're putting in their body. And hopefully when they get the clarity on the rapid evolution of these substances, novel psychoactive substances, I guess the catch-all term, they can, you know, take seriously the need to get into treatment and avoid utilizing the dangerous drug supply that's, as you rightly point out, rapidly evolving.
So we heard from Ms. Gray earlier, and she was, I think, going to get a surgery. Her surgeon had told her not to take her methadone. And once again, methadone is a drug that helps people not feel withdrawal symptoms as they're trying to wean off of opioids. The doctor that she was talking to said, don't get off of your methadone. You know, how often do these sorts of things conflict, and how can you navigate that? Because, you know, I'm sure these doctors need to be informed, especially on something like surgery, on what they're taking.
Totally. And I think, you know, that's where collaboration is critical, right? And there's, you know, a lot of misconception, even within my healthcare peers, about how to, you know, manage medications for opioid disorder in the context of their own specialties, right? And so what we do, and, you know, I'm a part of a group called Maryland Addiction Consultation Services, MACS, where we also provide education to our peers within hospitals in the community to be able to kind of ensure that they're aware of best practice standards around management of medications for opioid use disorder in the context of their specialty, so that, you know, we can ensure that, again, the best outcome happens for the patient. Because I think all of my colleagues in other specialties certainly have the best interests of the patient at the forefront, but they may not necessarily be as up to date on, you know, what the standard of care is for managing these medications. And so that's why it's always great when we can actually get on the line and speak about, you know, our shared patients. And I try to call a lot of providers, and, you know, certainly understanding the busy nature of their schedules is hard to get on the phone, but, you know, to the extent we can figure out ways to be able to improve communication amongst providers, that'd be great.
Right. And stopping that methadone would do what? I mean, would it just leaves her more susceptible to relapse, or?
Well, you know, in the research that talks about, you know, continuation of methadone maintenance during surgery, you know, the outcomes for patients are just much better. You're thinking in a surgery, you're going to get, you know, an operation that creates pain, right, by nature of the framework of it. And so, you know, you've got your opioid dependence as a baseline that, you know, is getting covered through methadone maintenance. And then you've got this additional iatrogenic injury from the surgery that creates a new form of pain. And so you should be treated for that pain, right? And so you should get opioids in addition to your baseline medication, methadone, buprenorphine, that you're taking to cover your opioid dependence, right? Because there's the dependence baseline level plus the new pain that is created from the surgery. And so a lot of providers sometimes think that, oh, because patients are getting methadone, we don't need to treat the pain. And right, the reality of it is that there's now two issues at play, right? We've got to cover your baseline opioid dependence, and we also have to address the pain. And so I try to inform my surgeon colleagues that, you know, you should treat the patients that have substance use disorder and are on methadone maintenance just like you treat any other patient, and allow the individual to just continue to take their medications for opioid use disorder, and then, you know, get the standard of care for managing their post-operative surgery pain.
And just one final question for you in terms of the challenges in treating older adults. You know, we talked about the comorbidities, but, you know, it's hard to get an older parent to rethink their their lives, right? Sometimes, you know, what mental blocks are you running up against?
You know, the biggest ones actually probably pertain to the medications themselves. So methadone, buprenorphine, there's, you know, a lot of stigma associated with the medications, and people feel like, you know, they're either transitioning from street drugs to transitioning from one drug to another. And, you know, we have to dispel, you know, the differences between buying things on the street versus taking a pharmaceutical grade medication. They think that, you know, there's lots of challenges related to damage to your bones and teeth and all these sort of things. And, you know, I have to remind my patients that, hey, it's important that you're, you know, getting proper nutrition and regularly seeing the dentist and doing the basic sort of things that you need to do in order to be able to take care of your body, which when you're in chaotic drug use, sometimes you don't necessarily prioritize as the number one sort of thing. And so once we have those conversations, you know, and dispel people's misconceptions about the medications themselves, I think we get a lot more traction and a lot more positive results for people's recovery.
Well, Dr. Malik Burnett, keep up the good work. Thank you so much for joining us today. Dr. Malik Burnett is the medical director at Reach Health Services. He joined us today in Studio A. Stay with us on Midday. On the other side of a quick break, we're going to be looking at how healthcare is addressed in Baltimore detention centers and also the one out in Western Maryland.
This is 88.1 WYPR, your local NPR news station.